Hello, this is Jade Nemro, and you're listening to you're not listening to Quasi-Mechanical Symbolism. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode 604. You know, it's interesting. How on earth do you prep, study, get ready for a panel discussion? Because I don't know which way the discussion is going to go. And I'm not interested in leading it particularly. I don't have that kind of an agenda. But, if it looks like it's wandering into weird directions, I might want to take it back somewhere else. But how do you get ready for that? Because I've been pondering this question. Well, this Friday I'm supposed to take I'm gonna be on a panel, so you know. the topic is mending families and Hesseth is non-traditional careers, and you know, I've always been kind of confused about the whole concept of non-traditional careers, just for the sole reason that I don't understand. Now, I've been accused many times of having a non-traditional career, but that's only when one can nail me down to actually having had a career. You know, career actually means that you pursue something specific over a long period of time, and you eventually get better and better at it. I suppose that's what that's about. But I've never been a career-minded person, because that always meant, you know, that you would rise in stature. You would become a manager or a director of something. I've already done that. Two or three times, probably. To the point to where I don't want to be that anymore. I've done that. It was boring. I would always find myself in circumstances where I would be jealous of the people that worked under me. I would rather be doing what they were doing than what I was doing, being the boss. Of course, I didn't want to make the amount of money that they made. When I was, for instance, my tiny, inconsequential, insignificant, not even hardly to be considered stint as the director of a early intervention program, I was constantly saying I'd much rather have their job than my job. My job is mostly paperwork. My job was supposed to be running this place. It was supposed to be it was meeting more institutional needs than actually doing any kind of significant work, or what I would consider to be the work of the organization. I wasn't doing anymore, and there was really no time for it. I was thinking that I might let myself do that, but I was told pretty strongly by the next people up the chain from me that you don't do that. That's what you send out other people to do, And it was made pretty obvious to me that the actual work of what we were doing was beneath me, or was supposed to be beneath me. And if I didn't feel like it was beneath me, there was something wrong with me. You know, I was supposed to be going up that ladder of being a manager and a director of this and this and this, and going up and up and up, and that was never interesting to me. And I certainly wasn't going to be pursuing it. Prep for something for which only life can prepare you. Which is okay, I like that. Because I've had lots of interesting life experience, and lots of interesting things to say, lots of interesting perspective to give, and that's what I feel like. I have always been best suited to providing was interesting perspective. I'm always philosophical about everything. In my job, I tend to be more philosophical than anything else. When people say, Jay, what should I do in this situation? I love those questions the best because that allows me to be philosophical. And say, well, you know, you could go in this direction. Now, I'm not big on giving people advice. I'm big on giving people choices of what they want to do. And just to say, well, here's what I see of the potential benefits and pitfalls of any given choice. And, you know, and that's what I can help people most with, is try to give them a better perspective, or at least a deeper, well, I don't know if it's deeper either, more perspectives from which to draw a conclusion, more perspectives for which to make hopefully a wiser decision. Anyway, so that's where I'm coming from. Fun stuff like that. I was talking all this morning with Lisa about institutionalism. One of my favorite things that I'm not very fond of institutionalism. I understand that it's a very efficient way to at least say you're dealing with something. You know, we will set up an institution to handle autism, and people can feel a lot better that they're being noticed. That seems to be a funny thing. When I first got into autism, it was all about, you just wanted to inform people that it exists. Because people hate being misunderstood. It's hard. Let me tell you a little bit about autism. Autism is can be difficult sometimes because until people notice you're handicapped, they will give you garbage, you know, because if you look normal, they will consider you to be normal. When you don't act normal, their first and biggest need is to try and convince you that you need to start acting normal. You know, please act normal. Stop that. Stop that. You're embarrassing everybody. One of my friends has a Down syndrome. He's an adult now. He's 30. The child. He's a Down syndrome child who's now an adult. And it's really obvious. I mean, Down syndrome, you have that mongoloid look. He's a sweet guy. He's cute. He's got his, you know, he's a very endearing man. And that's great. You know, everybody acts a little kinder around him. Everybody he's like this ray of sunshine. And it's marvelous. I'm not speaking against it. One of the problems with autism is that you don't get that with autistic people. They look normal. You know, you can tell a Downs kid when he's coming, and you know how to respond to a Downs kid. Because you kind of know what you're going to get from him. You know, slow, not much out of him, but usually nice people. I'm sorry, they're just nice. I like them. I've only seen a few angry Downs people. Mostly because of how they get treated. But autism is totally different because usually when your kids are young, you'll be getting nasty looks. And you will be, you know, and it will be said of you as a parent of that child that you are a bad parent. You need to control that kid better. You know, they shouldn't be behaving like that. The fact that you let them behave like that just offends me. And they're constantly getting chewed at by, you know, little old ladies, you know, who are kind of the behavior mafia. and that was what the big deal was back then, was just trying to educate people so that they would react better. Oh, your child's autistic. Oh, well, then that's okay. See, but the problem is with autistic kids, They don't tend to be particularly nice. They tend to be upset. You know, circumstances upset them, especially social ones, where they're out in public. So then that's problematic, too. You just have to develop kind of a thick skin as a parent of an autistic... My autistic son is 16. And, so he's about ready to come into being an autistic man. And, you know... it isn't like Downs where everybody treats them nice and it's sweet and they go, oh, isn't that cute? They don't do that with autistic kids. Autistic kids are nasty and they scream and they go, ah, all the time. And it's just, no. It's not, it's not pleasant to be around. You know, over time, they tend to learn tactics to moderate themselves. I think Matt does pretty good in social circumstances. And he's decided to be the class clown, the ham, and that's not bad either, because it's much more pleasant to have people laugh at you than it is to have them scowling and angry at you because you're not behaving right. If you're going to be strange, might as well be strange in a funny way. And I'm glad Matt went in that direction. It works for me. So I'm trying to remember how I even got on this particular topic. How did I get here? This is always what happens to me. I start talking about something and I wander off somewhere and I forget where I started. I was talking about preparing for a panel discussion about mending families, stuff like that. And I was saying that I was talking to my family about institutionalism and, how autism kind of assaults the institutional mind. You know, assaults the grandmother who feels like she is the great arbiter of what is proper and appropriate. And that the biggest thing in your life should be to please her. To make, you know, to be prim and proper. Pardon me. So I was getting really kind of, you know, and the institution is, I already said this before, didn't I? I did. That the institution is one of my favorite whipping boys because I'm sorry, you know, I've got this rebellious streak. And I go with it. I try to find my favorite thing to attack, and my favorite thing to attack is institutions, because they do. They don't care about the individual. They don't care about how you're feeling or how anything else is going. It's all about the institution, what serves its needs. Well, it's that simple. Now, we all get caught up into it to a certain degree, because almost all of us tend to make our living serving institutions. You know, if you're a school teacher, you serve the institution of school. Now, we all try to make school teachers feel really good by, you know, telling them how important, how wonderful they are, and how much we treasure what they do. But really, what we are trying to praise them for isn't what they end up spending most of their time doing. There are some that can, and I'm glad for them, you know, that we have people that can get, that can handle those institutional requirements and then still have energy left over to actually be concerned about the children. And I don't mean in the aggregate, the children. I mean each individual child. Now, that's hard to do when you've got 30 of them. I'm glad, you know, when people talk about class sizes going down, that's great, you know. Darn shame we can't have it go down to, you know, 3 or 4. But that's what families are for. Why schools get the lion's share of time with children and taken away from parents, I understand why, but it's a shame that it is. You know, people all say, well, you know, those parents have to go out and work to support this economy so we can have this wonderful school. And you go, you know, you wouldn't need that wonderful school if your parents' time wasn't being chewed up constantly by paying for schools and other bits of society. You know, I'm not going to blame just one institution. It's the whole institutional thing. You know, you are expected to work this long in the service of this. I think strangely enough, in the old days, I think people actually had more time, you know, for the important things. I think we have gotten to the point to where we lack that time. Now, this wasn't what I talked about this morning, but I'm going to talk about it here because it comes to mind and it's just as important. I did an essay once. I think it's still up on the old website, quix.us, quix.us. You can go to the old Quay Information Exchange link on the website, and you'll see some of my essays. I did them while I was doing contract work for the state in relation to our family maternal and child health council. And it mostly had to do with just contact time. You know, people always talk about, oh, well, you need to have quality time. You go, that's kind of a misnomer, I think. Because, you know, you'll never get the quality time unless you have quite a quantity of time there. You won't be there for the special moments if you're just not there. You know, you can say, well, I'm going to plan those special moments. And you go, you can't plan those. They just kind of happen. But it has to be from time together, spent together. Anyway, so my big thing was about finding time. The first thing I said was, you know, you need to have more time together with your family. So the thing you need to do is you need to find ways to make money so you can spend more time with your family. And that's kind of what I guess I'm sort of working toward here. Constantly having to change my visor so I'm not being blinded by the sun because I'm in my car as usual. You know, I'm trying to get myself into a position where I'm a speaker and a lecturer and a writer, and you have more control over your time. And hopefully make enough money so that spend more time with your kids. The whole point isn't to get rich, because that takes a lot of effort sometimes. And usually that effort's chewed up during the time when your kids need you the most, when they're young. You know, if you didn't develop that relationship with them when they're young, you won't have it when they're older, and you won't be able to get that no matter how much you want. I think about the relationship my father and I have. The time we spend together tends to be strained. My father tends to want to give me advice. He's in his 60s, I'm in my 40s. And you know what? Honestly, I try to be respectful. I try to be kind. I don't think I do a very good job. But we didn't have that relationship to begin with. My dad was very much a part of, I think, his success track. And he... and so, you know, we really didn't have much of a relationship. I think my father had much more of a relationship with my older brother. And, you know, and I find myself falling into that trap too. And I've got to work on that. I've got to be concerned about making sure that all my kids know, or that I develop a relationship with all of my children, not just some of them. Because right now, I don't really have much of a relationship with my dad. I mean, we talk about the weather, we talk about stuff like that. There's a few things that we've had in common, but not very much. And I find there's just this horrible gulf and distance between us. My dad, of course, is wanting to close that gap a little bit, but, you know, he's wanting to do it in relationship to me being his child. And I haven't been a child for some years. So it's kind of difficult because, you know, we really don't have much to do together. He got better the older he got. I'll give him lots of credit for that. But he was better with other people's kids. He married my stepmother, and she had a son that was significantly younger than I was. I don't know how significantly, but he was younger than I was. Maybe five, six years younger than I am. And he essentially raised that last child of hers. Did a wonderful job. Did a fantastic job. I think he was a better father to her children than he was to me. Of course, I will readily tell you that I'm a difficult person. I'm sure I was a difficult child. You know, the kind of child that only a mother could love. My father struggled with the fact that he didn't understand me. And that's understandable. I'm weird. I'll freely say how odd I am. Now I intend to, you know, and I have capitalized on my oddities. And I'm doing okay. So when I was talking about the whole issue of time and time with family, you know, our culture doesn't encourage that at all. Our culture says, you know, you have to be successful, and you get successful. You work, and maybe sometimes in your 40s. Or in your 50s, you actually start reaping the rewards of all that labor. Success often comes at that later time. But the problem is that's usually when your kids are leaving home. You know, if you think about the stereotypical rebellious teen, that's what you're going to have. You know, it's somebody who says, you don't care about me, you never cared about me before, and the sad part is they're probably right. Not because you didn't really care, but because it was difficult to show it while you were trying to get to that success. And honestly, you have to do that maybe a little quicker than normal, you know. Go to school fast, get that stuff out of the way. Get on the success track early, because otherwise you're going to have problems. I see it with a friend of mine who I like a lot, and he's become very successful. He's doing quite well, you know. Got the trappings of success, even though he's in his early 30s. Now his mid-30s. But I worry about his kids, you know. I worry about my kids too. I need to spend more time with my children. I think I do a pretty good job, but that's only relatively speaking. I have to be more concerned about my child's individual needs. That's what I was talking about. Anyway, let's finish up about time. Then I'll say some things about individual needs of people. Of children. For the most part, because that's where all the important stuff finally kind of comes down. Okay, time. One of my first things was see how you can economize so that you can spend the most time with your family. You know, as much as you can engage your family in with your work and work together, all the better. Because then you'll still have time with your family. And you'll be making money at the same time. Amazing. We don't tend to do that anymore. That's been drummed out of the culture. That's that kind of second class, you know, farmer thing. You know. You're not likely to get that anymore. So, anyway, spend as much time as you can with your family. Get rid of distractions. And, you know, I really kind of poked at people's perceptions of it first, you know, the things that just kind of offend our society. Don't work so much. Don't spend so much time away from your family making money if you can pull it off. The more you can slide yourself that way, the better off you're going to be. If you can get your kid less out of school, all the better. Because that's gonna, you know, that buys you time too. Especially because school seems to desire all your child's time. You know, everything needs to be invested in school. School's the most important thing. School leading to career, leading to success, and leading to a happy retirement with a big RV and trying to rebuild family relationships that you spent 60 years ignoring in favor of saving up enough money so you could have this nice RV and travel around and see your kids that could care less about you at this point. It sounds horrible, but, you know, that's the breaks if you go with what society tells you. And you might not want to send your kids to school so much. There's more important things. Not saying the education, that knowing things isn't important, but we do throw way too much time at it, much more time than is required. I think if we gave it about a quarter of what we give it, I think you'd still basically get the same results. You know, there might be some people that do better with more intensive and more, but by and large, our schools don't do more intensive and more. They just chew up the time. Things like that, you know. I don't like television particularly. I've gotten to the point where we don't have broadcast television in our lives. We do have, in our household, we do have videos, and we've gotten into that horrible trap of using it as a reward for doing distasteful stuff, typically homework, other things like that. And I can't say much. I tend to profit off of it to a degree. Maybe my children will have a better ability to walk away from it. If I could say a couple of things to my kids, to say if I had one thing to do differently, and that one thing would have been I would have just gotten rid of the TVs completely. You know, I mean, well, I wouldn't have had so many screens. I would have encouraged other recreations. Anyway, so there was a few more things in that essay about how to get more time for your family, because I think it's so vital. You know, and I mean lots of time, as much time as you can pull together to make this happen is the best. Don't talk about quality time, because you can't do that. The time must come first. Don't even think about quality time. Just spend time. And quality will have a chance of appearing. Just get the time. Get it done. Okay, anyway, so let me see. What was I going to get back to? Dang it, I've lost it. Simon, I had it, but I can't remember it, and I'm not going to spend the time to go back, because I'll forget even more. Shoot. And it was something we had talked about this morning with Lisa and whatever kid happened to be awake. I think it was Brenna today. Oh, that's what brought up old Brenna. I love Brenna. Brenna reminds me of me when I was a kid. And that's in some way kind of interesting, and in other ways somewhat sad. Because I don't remember having a very pleasant childhood. Now, I really do, you know, but let's talk about individual needs, because that's what it comes down to. It isn't about how I feel about it. It really has more to do with how Brenna feels about it. Or just how your individual child feels a need. When you get in institutional thinking, you don't think about individuals. That's one of the most important things to consider when you go institutional, is that you say, okay, everybody's basically the same. And it's important that not only do you say that to yourself, but you try to propagate that. You want everybody to be the same. School, that's one of the biggest institutional requirements of school, is that all children basically are the same. The same things should excite them. They should be excited by a basketball game or a football game. You know, they should love to go to pep rallies, because that's the basic fun that is available. If you don't find that fun, then they don't know what to do with you. You know, and you give them those kinds of times to kind of detox from all of the instructional stuff. And anyway, it's made to meet the needs of quite a few people. Now, if you don't fit the mold of quite a few people, you're going to be dissatisfied. I certainly was. School didn't fit my needs at all. I basically ignored school. And I could, because I was good at taking tests, and the work was not difficult for me. I saw other people struggling with schoolwork. I could get it done in about a quarter of the time. And then when I was finished, it was done. I didn't have to worry about it anymore. So, when it came to school for my kids, my tendency is to not send them, just for the reason that I don't consider school to meet needs very well. And when needs aren't met, that's where you get all of the weird problems of society, of life. You know, when you see dysfunction, when you see families falling apart, when you see things like that, I mostly credit the fact that the society we've set up, which is predominantly institutional, it really doesn't fulfill the needs of individuals. We don't have appreciable amounts of, and I know this sounds funny, but I think it's honest. We don't have a lot of free time. Time to be ourselves. We are mostly caught up in doing what society demands. Society demands more and more and more and more of us. It demands more time and thought of us. We end up having to lie, steal, and cheat to get a little bit of personal time. I guess that's better than calling it free time, because if you were to look at it, I guess it depends on how you define free time. if it's personal time, you have very little of it. You know, we are expected to be in large groups, doing what large groups want to do. And that really works for the group alpha people, you know, the leaders of groups, because you tend to do what they want to do. And, you know, for those who are hangers-on, which is the majority of people, it doesn't meet their needs. I am constantly concerned about detox, our increasing need to detoxify ourselves from life. In my family, I think it comes down to reading and videos. You know, I find that if people are wandering downstairs to watch a video that they've seen 20 times, that this is mostly trying to do detoxification. And I think that's one of the biggest problems of our society, is that more and more people require more and more time to detox from what they are presented as their lives. And it is presented to them. They didn't go out and seek it. They didn't get what they are probably after. Of course, anymore, people don't have much of a concept of what they want anyway, because it's become so foreign to the way things are, to our society. You don't get what you want. In fact, we kind of laugh about that. You know, it's kind of a weird, sick, twisted joke that's actually true. You know, who gets what they want? I don't. By golly. And that's sad. And you can see it in everything that we do, and the fact that we go and we mindlessly buy things. Now, society likes that. They want us to kind of mindlessly buy things, and they want us to buy things on impulse, hoping that it will bring us some kind of satisfaction, happiness, or joy. It isn't that society said, let's make everybody really, you know, hungry for anything at all because they're so starved for their own personal needs that they'll buy whatever we're peddling. I don't think anybody sat down and really planned that as some kind of a conspiracy. It's just a convenient truth, and we capitalize off of it. And so we're not going to do anything to rock that boat, so we kind of encourage people to kind of be kind of empty, to not be terribly fulfilled, because fulfilled people don't go out and buy trinkets. Fulfilled people don't buy products made in China particularly. They don't buy tons of videos. They don't see the need. They're fulfilled. They don't, you know, instead of saying, hey, do you want to go and rent a video? The fulfilled person would go, yeah, whatever. That's okay. I'm happy doing what I'm doing here. Where other people are like, oh, yeah, man. Oh, I had a hard day at work. Yeah, let's go rent a video, man, and watch a video. Cool. Fulfilled people don't have to behave like it. It's funny. Funny in a way. Anyway, so one has to look toward individual needs. Brenna is an interesting case. She's an interesting kid. When we went and got evaluated, when most of the kids went and got evaluated, everybody except Joshua, he didn't want to do it. I don't blame him, and I'm not ever going to give him grief for it. He didn't want to do that. He doesn't want to be different. He wants to fit in. And that's okay. If that's what's important to him, then let's see about trying to do that. Tough for me, because I don't care about that. So Josh and I have to find our personal time in other ways. Brenna, when she went for that evaluation, that was her biggest thing. Well, she's so kind of not really antisocial, but she, you know, their biggest things was she needs to be put in social circumstances. You know, that's important for all human beings because we're social creatures. And you're going, you know what? I don't think that that's necessarily true. I think there are many people who are social creatures, but there are going to be some people that aren't. I'm not particularly social. I don't like social settings. Like I said, and these affirmations I shared with you before, you might say, oh, well, those all sound very good, but you have to understand they're all kind of non-social. I'm not anti-social. I don't hate people. I just, you know, I'm just kind of a live and let live person. I want to be let alone to live my life the way I would like to, and I'm perfectly willing to let you do that, too, as long as you don't get into my face. Social has always been that. Always people getting into my face, talking about stuff I don't care about, wanting to engage me in some kind of conversation that's not interesting to me. And that I'm supposed to be some kind of social do-gooder, you know. Well, you need to sacrifice so other people can be happy. And then it's like, wait a minute. But in the course of doing that, who's doing anything to make me happy? And not that I want to get selfish, but I'm sorry. Nobody else is responsible for my happiness, obviously. In my case, it's pretty obvious that nobody else is responsible for my happiness. If they are responsible for my happiness, they're doing a poor job. I should fire them if I'm paying them. But it's that institutional mind that says everybody is social, you know. And you can see it when people are not social, everybody gets so weird about, oh, well, they need to get out more. They need to go do stuff, which is exactly what they said about Brenna. She needs to get out more. But when you talk to her, she doesn't have those needs. They're not there. And you can say, oh, well, she's mentally ill. She's socially deranged. She's, you know, people put it into happier, more PC terms. But that's basically what they end up saying. Is that we have to force her into social circumstances for her own good. And you're going, doesn't she know what's good for her individually? Now, I don't think you can take that too far. But, you know, I mean, because that obfuscates the need for parents and guidance and stuff like that. And I'm not willing to go that far because that's just crazy. But one needs to say, well, who is this child? What kind of person is she? And let's make sure that we're honoring what she is. You know, she could do good things and still be non-social, which is like me, I'm non-social. Just like when I was talking about my affirmations, I never got down to actually telling you what it was. Those things, being a writer, a lecturer, and a speaker, those aren't social things. Those are me imparting outward. I'm not doing much of a conversation there. Ask anybody. When I am talking, you know, I mean, we can converse, I guess, but it's only one-on-one type thing. If I'm in a group setting and somebody else wants to get their point across, I just tend to be quiet. And when they say, well, Jay, don't you have anything to say about this? And I'm more of the part that says, you know, I'm not into arguments. I'm not going to sit here and debate things. I says, but I will say, you know, when I'm given my time, and you can tell me how much time I have and whatever like that, I'm going to use that time to say what I'm going to say. And I don't want to be interrupted particularly. You know, and I don't, and that's not a problem. God seems to be along those lines. You know, I can feel somewhat justified that God says, you know, let every person speak in turn. Speak their piece so everybody can be edified. Everybody's got something to contribute. Even the ones that are nasty and horrible, they might have a point. Now, you don't have to sit there and listen. That's the great part about being a lecturer speaker. You're not forced to sit in that chair. You're not forced to, I hope. I don't want to be in a circumstance where people are forced to be there. That would be kind of, that wouldn't give me a good indication of if I'm touching hearts, if I'm making sense, if my thoughts have traction, if people don't have the ability just to stand up and walk away and say, I don't want to listen to this. That's fine. AbSec was great about a podcast. It's out there, but you don't have to listen to it. You know, you don't have to stay there. You can always take it off. And it's not even that you have to make some statement by you know, standing up and throwing up your hands and walking out of an auditorium in a very visual way. You know, you can just take it off your podcast. I don't ever know. I don't track how many people listen to the podcast. I really don't. I don't know. I tend to say that it's kind of a small group just from the fact that my server doesn't seem to be terribly busy. Okay. So, I'm non-social. I've noticed that Brenna is non-social. And I'm not taking the advice that the professional do-gooders, gave that says, well, we need to get her into more social circumstances. She doesn't need to be so isolated from everybody. And I'm saying, hey, if that's how she wants to spend her time, I don't see an immediate problem with it. Well, she won't do well in social circumstances and are so needed to be a success in this world. And you go, well, then I guess she won't be that kind of success. She'll find other things to do with her life that more honor her as opposed to honoring a group of psychologists, for instance, a group of social scientists or social workers who have this great need. You know, well, this kid doesn't go out clubbing. We need to make sure she goes clubbing every 2 or 3 weeks, you know, at least once or twice a week, or else she's not developing in the way that we think a normal person should develop. Everybody goes clubbing. And then you go, no, I don't. I said, I don't encourage my kids to. Too many bad things go on out there. Or they'll never have to socialize. So, well, and then they'll have to find other ways. I don't have to sit there and listen to them. So, anyway. I guess it's all kind of wrapping up into the whole thing of putting personal needs as important. When I see the dysfunction and the horrors of our world, the answer that keeps coming back to me again and again and again through my intuition and through what I see is that we're not really answering the individual needs of individuals. We may be throwing out there what we think most people need and trying to get everybody to fit in with that mold. And that might meet some needs of some people. Actually, it could be many people. You know, there is no one circumstance that will fit everybody. And we give that lip service sometimes, but we don't really ever go so far as to believe it. You know, schools, intelligent people say the right things, but then when they're put into circumstances of society and getting paid and doing that, they run back to what society has always said. You know, everybody's basically the same. If everybody's like this, everybody will be happy. We attune our society and life to meet the needs of this mythical standard person. And if you don't fit that standard, the most important thing society's trying to do is get you to fit that standard and to look happy while you do it. At least to look happy. You know, we tend to be a behaviorist culture. You know, we don't care how people are really feeling. We just want it to look good. We want them to look all smiley-faced and happy. We want all that to happen. Anyway, so, I think my time is just about up. I'm just about to my destination. And this is something of my preparation. Funny, because I don't know if you can really prepare for this kind of stuff. But I am nonetheless. Sure gives me a lot of podcast fodder. Ooh, that's a nice one. in preparation for my for the panel discussion I'll be participating in on Friday, in the morning, early morning. Oh, I still gotta find out if I'm how I'm supposed to dress for this. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. You've been listening to Life Autistic. This has been episode 604. Where's my pointer? There it is. Have a wonderful day.